The following program contains views and opinions that do not necessarily reflect those of KMRE staff or of the Spark Museum of Electrical Invention.
Hello and welcome to Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham, KAVZ 102.5 FM Deming and Van Zandt, and KMRE.org, wherever you are. We're doing things a little differently this week. There are three candidates running for Bellingham City Council's at-large seat, and primary election day is August 1st. So this week, you're going to hear from all of them. Up first is the incumbent, Roxanne Murphy, who sat down with our own Stephanie Contreras.
Roxanne Murphy, how does one go from being a bartender to city councilwoman?
Well, I loved being a bartender and gaining that experience in Ellensburg, Washington, when I went to Central Washington University. And it's humorous how much that helps me in being a city council member now, because it helps me with working with different kinds of people, helping them understand what the rules are for the bar and the community. But then, you know, just also connecting them to one another and preventing fights from happening and all these different ways that we can provide better service to the community while keeping people coming back.
Have you had an occasion to be the city council bouncer?
not in an exact way, more like just the liaison to help people understand each other's sides a little bit better. Same thing as a bartender.
Fair enough. What needed fixing when you ran the first time, and is it fixed?
It's kind of continual things that we're working on within the city, especially as far as Lake Whatcom, protecting our drinking water, making sure we get the right kind of development in our community. These are going to be kind of longer term ongoing things that we all want to focus on.
So an issue like Lake Whatcom is a perfect example of how you have to work with other governments, particularly the county council. How is your relationship, you and the city council's relationship with the county council?
I really appreciate the relationship change that's happened between the Lake Whatcom Water and Sewer District and the county council and the city council, let alone the mayor and the county executive. These relationships need to be strong. They can be at odds at other times, but when it comes to our drinking water, this is what we all have to work to protect.
And of course, the other big issue that is a city council and county issue is a jail. Mm-hmm. And the city council just sent a letter asking some clarifications to the county that you guys want resolved before you can sign on. Were you part of that letter?
We all basically advocated, especially in one specific way, that we want more alternatives and diversions to keep people from going back to jail, to keep people from getting there in the first place. So this is one thing that we're definitely asking for. There were also questions about the location and the cost and the fact that it's a regressive sales tax versus property tax. But this is stuff we're all working out with the county council to see if we'll get a positive or a negative vote on that.
Contested elections like yours is, or contested positions, are a referendum of sorts. So let's get right to it. How is the city of Bellingham better since you have been in office?
I like to think that I've provided an experienced kind of position on the city council since I have worked in local government for almost 10 years, and I've studied local government and getting a master's degree in public administration. I'm also a member of the Nooksack Indian Tribe, so I tend to look at these policies through a different lens than maybe an average kind of council member, and I've just tried to be there for the community and really listen to people and try to bring their viewpoints to the forefront so we can have a better city.
So what's an issue that's happened in your tenure that has benefited specifically from those insights in that position?
I just tend to lean toward kind of the more social justice things that I've tried to help with. When the community started really getting upset about what was going on with the Dakota Access Pipeline, I immediately submitted a resolution to ask our community to stand in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Or when I started to learn that there was going to be another ballot attempt to ban transgender people from bathrooms, I also worked on a resolution to make sure our community would be aware that that was in motion and to ask people to decline to sign petitions and potentially say no on that. So those are just a couple of examples of how I've listened to what's going on in the community and tried to create reflective action with their city council.
And how has the city of Bellingham specifically changed from those resolutions, or how are we better today?
I think we're a better community in terms of being able to focus all of our efforts and our say around these different things. and the community feeling like they have different council members on their side. This is work that we need to do to gain trust, to keep people involved, and also to get people to the table for the much less interesting things that we need their input on.
So you brought up I-1552, which is the bathroom bill that they are trying to get signatures for at the moment. And you just recommended to the city council, and the city council unanimously passed basically a recommendation to the citizens of Bellingham to not sign this bill. Is this really a Bellingham issue? Is this a big deal in Bellingham?
I think it is, in the sense that the city council in February, after the national presidential election, said that we were going to protect a bunch of different people. LGBTQ was a major component of that. So if we're willing to protect from that February resolution, we need to take it to the highest form, especially when a protected community like the LGBTQ community is definitely under attack. So this becomes a local issue for us because it will affect our local community members. And I don't want that to have any horrendous effect. No more oppression, no more depression. Support our transgender people.
Some people feel that if anyone has the ability to use any bathroom that they feel is best for them, that young people will not be safe or women will not be safe.
Statistics just haven't proven that. We have not become less safe if we share bathrooms. It's just not been proven to be a fact at all. And this is something that we have to do for humanity's sake, because people have the right to be who they are, and we should never persecute that.
And again, talking about how Bellingham is taking a stand in light of recent national elections, you talk a lot about advocating for people of color in Bellingham. Some people feel that the city council did not go far enough with the sanctuary movement, that we did not actually call ourselves a sanctuary city. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. One thing that I'm really proud of that I try to help people understand is that we have 4 pages of protections in terms of police work and how it relates to the immigrant community especially, but also people of color. So I really hope people will take time to take a look at that document. So much of what we heard during that advocacy when the city council was considering that issue was quite reflected in those documents. There are other things that people want out of it. We need to take it one step at a time. We do provide these protections, though, whether or not we have a name like sanctuary. I think we are such a hospitable community because we need to look at how many of these issues we've had in our community. And if we have more issues like this, I will go to the nth degree in terms of protecting our community. But let's take it as it goes. Maybe someday it will be called a sanctuary city. For the baseline, I'm just glad that we have these protections in place for all of our people.
Well, the protections are absolutely important when it comes down to the line. But if we have those protections, why not just call us a sanctuary city like Seattle did?
I'd be happy to. I have to convince the others on the council if that's the direction that they want to go.
So that's the stand that you would take. Yes, you're absolutely in favor.
Sure. Great. I have been from the start.
So let's talk about homelessness. And the city had a great plan to come up with a temporary shelter and a wet shelter, which means that people who are under the influence have a place to stay and shower. Obviously, that did not go well with the port. And where are we now? What happens next?
Well, the great news is the Bellingham City Council and the mayor are not giving up on this. This is too important of an issue for our community. If we're really going to support our homeless situation, it has to start with the city to show what our values are. So the great news is that I just heard that there are a couple more properties that we can consider. That is one of the biggest challenges because there are so many needs out of where you would locate this in terms of, for example, being close to transit, being close to other services. So I'm really anxious to see where those locations are and to work with the community to see if that will indeed help.
And speaking of homes, of course, the greatest need is among homeless, but we just had a great town hall that was really impressive, where a lot of people came and quite rationally gave a diversity of opinions. What's your takeaway from that?
I was just relieved. I mean, what I'm used to for discussions about that issue is our community being at odds, one side against the other, and disrespecting one another. It was so incredible to experience the absolute opposite with that whole thing, because community members were starting to really understand infill is not going to necessarily be a choice in our future. We have to fulfill these Growth Management Act objectives in terms of accepting population as the county seat. So I want to implement that work in really thoughtful way in getting better economic development and infill within our city where it's appropriate. We're not trying to ruin neighborhoods. What we're trying to do is increase housing supply, increase Class A office space, get better jobs in this community. And it was really nice through that forum to hear that so many people want us to work with developers, create incentives, and increase the housing inventory.
One of the issues that people come up with in some of the neighborhoods is the character of neighborhoods, which is changing anyway. So I don't know how useful an argument that is. But the other big point is ADUs, accessory dwelling units. Where do you stand on the legality and support or not support?
Yeah, I believe we fundamentally need all housing types. And that includes ADUs. However, what I will say is I understand that neighborhoods are vehemently against them because they have seen really horrible ADU types.
So, what would be an example of?
An ADU that was poorly constructed to begin with, that is now falling apart and is now an eyesore for the community. I get why people in those neighborhoods do not want to have anything to do with accessory dwelling units. At the same time, we're working to create provisions and standards and laws about what an appropriate ADU would be. So then there are neighborhoods in our community that want to try ADUs. So if Happy Valley and Columbia are willing to accept this infill, I'd like to work with them and then demonstrate what this can add to a community versus detracting from it. If we can get other buy-in, great. If not, I still want to work with those neighborhoods that would accept it.
So some of the outcomes that are inevitable from our population growth is as we infill or as there are more people, however we resolve that, there's going to be higher crime. And how is the city working to make sure that we have adequate and respectful police force?
It's great that our police force is proactive in going through trainings before issues happen so that they know about the most effective ways and ways that often improve with de-escalation and how to treat different diverse people within our community. We're also committed to making sure we have adequate police officers. So we've added police officers in my time as a council member with our annual budget, for example. And so those are the things we're going to have to continue to focus on as our community grows.
And the other thing, it's not that the most crucial need of our citizens, but when you talk about infill, the biggest thing that I hear about and see for myself is parking. Mm-hmm. What can the city even do about that if our small streets get more and more crowded with cars?
Mm-hmm. First of all, it's an excellent problem for a city to have because you have created so much economic development or business infill that it is now an attraction that people want to get to. There's various things that we can do as a city in terms of supporting transportation improvements, getting as many parking spots as we can, the way we manage the parking inventory with different rates that we can set to encourage people for on-street parking to maybe not park as long. Things that we want to work with the business community, especially to get better parking rotation and movement.
So, you are representing a lot of different constituencies by being on the Bellingham City Council. Aside from your race, what, if any, perspectives do you think are missing or what voices might be missing?
Within the City Council? Gosh, we've got so many different people. It's kind of hard to say. You know, if we were down women, I'd say we need more feminine perspective. But we have so many different kinds of folks. I guess, you know, if you look at it from a bigger picture, one thing that we could benefit from is actually more conservative voices since we're also liberal. But we can get that from our community at the same time. So I just think we're a pretty well-rounded council.
You talk a lot about social justice and the social justice changes you want to see. So we've talked about a couple of things. We talked about the bathroom bill and protecting people of color and people who are at risk. What other social justice changes are important to you?
Always looking at equity in how we deliver our services. if you think about it, most of the things we work on in the city council support, you know, the 1% of folks, the people that need to get their development approved and people that need their sewer improvement. And so I'm always looking for ways that we can have a broader impact to help out everyone in our community, especially the people that are struggling, lower income, and that nature.
Do you have a suggestion?
It's simple things like fighting for affordable housing. This is something that we have to do in our community to show that we reflect that value that our community has. If our community supported giving their personal money for housing options, that's something that we can take to the highest form in terms of getting those kinds of developments and increasing that inventory.
And then the other side of that picture is jobs. We're losing jobs, and the jobs that we have aren't paying enough. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the city council's role in helping to foment better jobs, and what would you like to see happen?
I'm glad that we're starting to be willing to take a look at our zoning, because I think a lot of the lack of development has come from the fact that we have a very complex zoning code. So we're going to continue to look at things like that. At the same time, there are different incentives that we can create that could even have environmental focus and asking for green buildings and a percent of affordable housing for redevelopment. There are different ways that we can try to attract development infill and get businesses into our commercial areas. I really am also hopeful about what the waterfront redevelopment will be, and I hope that will be kind of a flagship project that will create jobs, have recreation, and really reflect Bellingham's values.
So the waterfront redevelopment has been, just seems like it's been hanging there for years. Give me an update on where we are with that, and where would you like to see us go?
So the Port of Bellingham is the one that owns the property and is managing that, but the city is going to be doing the infrastructure in terms of streets and curb gutter sidewalk and roads and parks. So we're ready to go on our side, and the developer that's working with the port definitely has some exciting plans for buildings that he wants to keep and development in phases that will be done. I just want to see any action out of this. There are community members that don't think that they will ever see action out of this. So I hope I'll be reelected, so I continue to work with the port on that.
I hear you. Do you think in the current plan that there will be enough housing and commercial opportunities?
Not just with that property. Let's make it in harmony with all the work that the city council could be doing and the administration will do.
Mm-hmm. So everything that we've talked about are some of the biggest issues of the city. What am I missing? What are the other issues that you are concerned about?
You know, it's just a garden variety of issues. The number one thing that I worry about is we go through a lot of these different issues that have mega impact on our community, and we don't see community involvement. Like, for example, one of the most powerful things that happens in the city to really guide the direction is the budget. We get hardly any feedback about that. And maybe that's a sign that the community is trusting the people that are at hand doing the work, but I want people to always be watching us, giving us feedback, telling us what they'd like to see. So I just hope that that will increase with time.
The city council meetings have been more lively the past year than maybe several years put together beforehand.
It's exciting to me.
What do you think is behind that?
I think people are really worried about what's going on in our nation, and they don't want this to have an impact on our community. And so please come out, get involved. If anything is going on with this, I hope it will get people involved. Get involved with a party of your choice, start attending neighborhood meetings, definitely come visit us at the city council or the county council. This is stuff that we need, because we also need people to run for office. We're not going to be here forever.
Roxanne, what do you wish people knew about you?
Well, I just wish they knew that I've worked really hard to try to be a fair leader. You know, I try to take all sides in. I try not to come with a preset notion about how I'm going to vote. I don't like working things out with the council members ahead of time. What you get is a clear mind out of me, and I just want to try to support the community's values.
Roxanne Murphy, thank you so much for the time you took today.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Willingham, and you're listening to Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM and KAVZ 102.5 FM. That was current City Council member Roxanne Murphy talking with our host Stephanie Contreras. This week, we're talking to the three candidates for Bellingham City Council's at-large seat. And up next, Stephanie's going to sit down with candidate Gene Layton.
Okay, Jean Layton, what in your mind are the top issues facing our city?
Okay, the top three that I'm talking about is housing, including affordable housing and housing the homeless, living wage jobs, and the health of our community overall.
Okay, so let's start with housing. And we just had a housing town hall with the current city council. What is your perspective? Did they do a good job?
There were a lot of people there who were from the Bellingham Tenants Union with valid concerns. I think I would have asked a little bit more of them for their true messaging. I've had lots of conversation with the people from Bellingham Tenants Union, and most of what they're asking for is basic information, basic rights, and I'd like to see that be a key component to the tenant landlord interaction.
What's going on with our housing? What are your solutions?
Our housing is becoming more and more expensive. We are stuck between two of the largest markets on I-5, and both of them can allow people to live in this beautiful community and work where they
You're talking about Vancouver and Seattle?
Vancouver and Seattle, absolutely. I was talking to somebody from Seattle, and they're like, you don't understand. I can come up here and spend less. Yes, I got a commute, but I'm spending less. I'm in a great community. There's light, there's air, there's parks. Why would I want to be in a tiny box in Seattle?
One of the solutions, or has sort of worked out to be a solution, is accessory dwelling units. But I think that you have a different perspective on that. So let's hear from you about that.
First, let's define the term. Accessory dwelling unit means that someone has put another unit, another room, or perhaps two, on their own property and rents it out independent of the main house. It sounds fabulous until you start to realize that over half of the current housing stock in Bellingham is rented already. And then you imagine putting another unit in the back of fill in the blank house. And now you've increased the number of renters who are on that one property. Unless you determine that it's actually an owner-occupied building, I think all this is doing is creating more demand and more places for more people to draw money out of the community.
What about people whose parents are moving back in with them and want to rent out their mother-in-law or have that be a separate unit legally?
Okay. You can already do that. You can do an attached ADU, and that's legal in every
And you're part. You're okay with that?
I think that's great. Okay. I think that's exactly what we want to have happen. But when you start talking detached, the dadus instead of the adus, then you're getting into a market. And I don't think that the city should be enabling that market. Because what happens to the neighborhood when you have the detached ADUs is most of them are on top of a garage in order to supply their parking. Which means you're automatically, in some cases, especially in older neighborhoods, you're above the roof line of the original building. And now you're creating shadows on backyards. You're creating noise at a very different level.
Wait a minute. Shadows on backyards? Like on the
their neighbor.
But you started off by saying, we have this huge problem. We are in a tech corridor between Vancouver and Seattle, and it's only going to get worse. Is shadows on our neighbor's house really the biggest issue we're facing?
If it's in a single family neighborhood and that neighbor bought that piece of property in order to grow all their food in the backyard, darn straight, it's part of the problem. When somebody purchases a house in a single family neighborhood, they are buying a social contract. The social contract says this one house will be occupied by one group of people, typically a family. Now, everybody's definition of family is different. But in Bellingham, the definition of family is no more than three unrelated people. And that's one of the parts of our current law that's not being enforced.
Well, do you think that it should be enforced? Because three unrelated people, that's the city getting into people's business. Who gets to decide if somebody lives in a house I bought? I mean, I'm in a polyamory relationship, so I'm not literally related to anybody that I'm with. So I don't want the city legislating against that.
And that's where it gets to be complex. I agree. You know, the situation is that when you're talking about zoning, you have to have some barrier to, okay, well, we're not going to do anything. And now you're in a situation where that 7-bedroom house next door to you is occupied by 14 people, none of whom are related, all of whom have cars. And you have a situation where a boarding house is next door to your single family house. That's not what people bought into on the social contract.
Well, and I think there's a whole argument between what's a social contract and what's a legal contract, and you're taking one stand, and I see if we are going to be getting an influx of people, regardless of what we do, that some of that might be inevitable.
What if we don't encourage them coming?
You think they're not going to come anyway?
I think some will. I think some always do, and that's a reality. But we also have to protect the people who are here with jobs, with careers, that as these rents keep increasing massively, are being priced out of the market. Because those folks are ending up in Ferndale, Linden, Everson, Sumas, and they're commuting into their jobs, which means that we'll never get them out of their cars because we don't have mass transit to those areas to prevent these people from driving into downtown to go to work.
So let's talk about the people who don't have jobs. There's a couple of different issues there. You said the people who are already here who have jobs, well, fewer and fewer of us do. And does that mean that we should be edged out because we don't have a job? I mean, like, don't we have to work to increase jobs for everyone?
We need to be increasing living wage jobs. Absolutely. But I'm going to go back and touch back because when we have a situation where one market force, rents increasing, moves out another group of people, we have to wonder how much of our community, how much of our spirit, how much of our everything that attracts people to Bellingham, how much of that is getting shoved out because those people work on the fringes of our community financially. There are an awful lot of people here who have 2, 3, 4 jobs, something else on the weekend. But there are the creative souls who have done things like create a radio station. You know, they're the people who are the vibrant soul of Bellingham. You move out the vibrant soul and you end up with something that looks like Bellevue. I don't think that's what we want as a community. So we have to be able to enforce some rules so that people can't use their personal property as a business without some consequences.
Well, some of the people who work 3 or 4 jobs might need to live in somebody's attached dwelling unit. I'm just saying because it's the only thing that's affordable. But let's talk about the people at the absolute end of the spectrum, people who are homeless, because that's the other issue that ties in with all of this. And you know, Bellingham's been wrestling with that, and the proposed shelter didn't go through. Where do you stand on that issue?
Shelter first? That was simple. The idea that 200 people without any barrier to substance use or any kind of mental health screening with their pets could go into a single room, sleep on mats on the floor without creating dissension. Somebody doesn't understand basic human interaction. That was a riot waiting to happen. And that's not the way to house people. Yes, it will get them out of the rain, but that's about all it's going to do. I think that the shelter being at the port doesn't respect our growth ideals. You know, we want...
In what way?
We want the port to be the economic driver for the next century. And it's really hard to be the economic center of our community if you're trying to push people out of a doorway in the morning in order to step over them to get into your space.
Well, I think part of the issue is there's a lot of people in neighborhoods who don't want a homeless shelter in their neighborhood because of their neighborhood character, which kind of goes back to the social contract. So if you can't have a shelter in a neighborhood and you can't have a shelter in the port, where should people be housed?
Okay, first of all, I don't think they should be in a shelter. I think they need to be in a house. A small house, perhaps, a single room occupancy situation, that's housing. Shelters are just an overnight roof over your head.
Sure.
It doesn't give you a place to leave your stuff and go off to work. I did a ride along with the HOT team on Thursday.
And that is?
Sorry, the HOT team is the homeless outreach team. It's the group that was established about two and a half years ago to meet the neighborhood requests for hey, can you deal with this situation that we've got in front of our business? Or there's a homeless camp over here. Can you help them figure out where the next place they need to be is that isn't in the woods? And, you know, when you do that kind of work, when you go out on a hot team ride along, you sign a disclosure that you will not disclose. So I'm going to get really vague on details because I can't share. But I worked with three different people in the hot team that day. Wow, they're doing a lot of good work. They're making sure that people get to doctor's appointments. And so their mental health is being evaluated. Their mental health is being treated. They help people make sure that they didn't miss an appointment with other social services so that people were progressing towards actual housing. They were making sure that people were still alive. Doing that gut check of, wow, I haven't seen X for so many days. Let's go to the three places we know we normally find that person.
Okay, your solution is we need to house the homeless, which is a great answer. But when you talk about building individual houses for people, that is costly and that takes a lot of time. Maybe one shelter is not a great permanent solution, but it gets people off the streets until you can start to build houses, right? I mean, do you want people to just wait on the street?
But if we can find land to put tiny homes on. I'm working with a group up in Lummi right now. The Stepping Stones group is Lummi, and the other group is called Homes Now, Not Later. We've built two houses in the past 2 months.
Is that for a family each?
Yeah. So there are people who are physically housed now because these people decided to build these tiny homes. And we could do that in Bellingham. We just need the property. So here's my big dream. Because everything starts from a big dream. For Bellingham, it would have to be a house built on a trailer or a house built in on a platform that could be easily moved, you know, whether it's by forklift or whatever. We drop them on city-owned property that is not currently slated for development within the next 2 years.
What would be a good example of that?
It could be almost anywhere. The reality is there are small plots in some community areas. There are larger plots in others.
But you're saying you're opposed to an intermediate shelter altogether?
I think if we have to have an intermediate shelter, that's great. What was planned was going to be 2 years out, $1.5 million, and it was not considered temporary at all.
So let's turn to the jail, which is the other big issue in Bellingham. And you know, the city council just wrote to the county council with their concerns about the proposal. Where do you stand on that?
We need the jail to remain in Bellingham. It should not be in Ferndale. Why we purchased land outside of our county seat is beyond me. I know we spent way too much money on it. So let's acknowledge that. It needs to be right-sized. Currently, we're housing roughly 250 a day. We need it to be slightly larger than that for possible increases. But we certainly don't need 400 beds. We don't. And we need to acknowledge that diversionary courts would take care of an awful lot of what people perceive as increasing crime. So what I'd like to do, I want to see the parking lot north of the jail built on with the new jail, whatever the new jail needs to be to house that 250, let's call it 300, so we have a little bit of wiggle room.
Contested elections are kind of a referendum of sorts. So you're running against an incumbent. Why do you need to be in? Why does Roxanne need to be out?
Okay. I'm not running against anyone. I'm running for Bellingham City Council at large because my ward is not up this term. So I'm running for the open seat, the seat that I might be able to stand and represent the people of Bellingham. Why Roxanne chooses to run, that's completely up to her.
What is missing on the city council that you will represent?
Okay, first of all, there's not a single person on the city council who's a renter. And everybody is either a homeowner or a landlord or both. I'm a renter, 5 years in the York neighborhood. I serve on the York board. And we need that perspective because even in the time I've been renting in York, what's happening in the rental market has drastically shifted. You know, I'm routinely hearing people say, my rent went up $200 a month.
Beyond being a renter, what are the perspectives that you are adding and what are the issues that you want to change that are in a different direction than the city council's going in?
Okay. I'm originally not from Bellingham, as so many people aren't. But my background is I grew up in New Jersey and then I moved to New York and I became a landlord in New York City. So I've dealt with a lot of the complexities of not enough housing, lots of people, lots of diversity in income level. And how do you support a strong, vibrant community when you have to make sure that all these people are able to get to work, have a place to sleep? So what I'd like to do is I'd like to bring that perspective of knowing what other options are out there to the city council. I'm a naturopathic physician, so healthcare is the third leg of my stool.
How do we encourage the right businesses to come in and give us good paying jobs that pay well for the people who need them?
So when we start talking about jobs, we have to start talking about living wage jobs. Living wage jobs are not service industry. So anytime you hear something saying, great, we're bringing in this new restaurant, hotel, bar, those are all service level jobs. That's all great. We'll get tax income, but we're not going to get the living wage jobs that'll make those people able to stay here in town. What we need to do is look for the industries that will bring those living wage jobs. So, because we're between Vancouver and Seattle, let's start talking about the internet people, the people who can do things like create games, create the structure of the internet.
And how do we lure those people?
We need fiber optics. We need the fastest, most stable internet.
Two final quick questions. I-1552 is the anti-trans bathroom bill, and City Council just made a recommendation that Bellingham doesn't vote for it. If you had been on the council, would you have joined in that recommendation?
Oh, absolutely. But let's clarify language just a little bit. They passed a resolution that said, please don't decline to sign the initiative gatherer's paperwork, because right now it's not on the ballot. Looks like it's gonna. They just got a huge upswell of funding.
Well, it didn't make it last time.
It didn't make it last time. The reality is, and I like to paint pictures so that people know very rapidly, is this a support or a denial? The reality is it's saying to a young person in school, you can't pee where you feel comfortable. And quite honestly, nobody should have to think about that. They need to just go pee. So, yeah, I would have definitely been on board. Would I have brought it as a resolution to council? I don't think I really would have.
Last question. There's been a lot of consternation about Bellingham being or not being a sanctuary city, and the city council agonized over it, affirmed a lot of protections that they say are in place for undocumented people living in Bellingham, but did not declare Bellingham a sanctuary city. Would you have?
No.
And why not?
The reality is we live in an area where we're under federal law because we're within 100 miles of the border. And when you're within 100 miles of the border, it's not anything that our state says. It's not anything our cities say. It's federal law. That situation puts cities in incredibly fine places where they can make a statement and not challenge funding, not be put on the radar of a federal government. That we have to remember who's in charge of our federal government right now. And I don't think we needed any more targets pointed at us.
Okay, so finally, what do you want people to know about you, Jean Layton?
If you elect me as your city councilor, realize that I will always answer your question. The first answer might be, I don't know the specifics. I'll get back to you. But realize that I always get back to people. Follow-up is incredibly important. And I will never, ever be the person who just ignores your email. The other side of it is, this is where I brought up my kids. This is where my husband and I have created our business. We're not going anywhere. And I'll always be active. And we really have to make certain that the right person is slotted into the city council, somebody who's going to be actively involved.
Fair enough. Jean Layton, thank you so much for your time today.
You are listening to Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham, KAVZ 102.5 FM Deming and Van Zandt, and KMRE.org. That was our host, Stephanie Contreras, talking to candidate Jean Layton. This week, we're talking to the three candidates for Bellingham City Council's at-large seat. And up next, Devlin Sweeney and I sit down with candidate Eric Bostrom.
So the first question I have for you is, why are you running for the Bellingham City Council?
Well, that's a good question. It's always a good question to find out why somebody gets into politics. My great-grandfather came from Sweden and came to this city. I'm the fourth generation of our family that's lived and worked here, even though I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, but because my dad left to get married and go to Yale and so forth. And so here I am, back in the fourth generation. And the reason I'm running is because, and by the way, I've never run for public office before other than a precinct officer, which really isn't the same thing at all. But I've never run for public office. But the reason is because I looked at some of the situations in the downtown especially, and in Bellingham at large. And we have two really important, significant problems that could even be called at crisis level. The first one is the homelessness that we see that's, I wouldn't say gradually, I'd say rapidly increasing every year. If you look back at 2012, we've had a steady increase up until this year of homeless people living on the streets, living in doorways, living in the city parks, and living all around. And I don't think we're solving it. We're spending about $500,000 a year on this problem, but I don't know if we're getting our money's worth. And so I want to get into the city council and try to help to change that, to help the homeless people and change the downtown. There was just an article about it in the Sunday paper last week, which would have been, what date is it, was last week? That was
The 20 something of June?
Yeah, of June. On the front page, how people don't feel safe downtown because of this situation. Well, it's a perception. Maybe they, I feel safe downtown, but if visitors don't feel safe, that affects business and that affects the economy and that affects jobs. So that's the first reason. Second reason is the average wage in Whatcom County, Bellingham, is significantly lower than other places who have the same housing costs that we have. We're the number one worst place, worst county in the state of Washington when it comes to rental values and affordability. And we're the second worst when it comes to home ownership affordability. And it's because the wages don't match the homes. Very low real estate inventory, very low rental inventory. And so I'm looking at solutions to increase the affordability of housing in Bellingham.
Well, that's great, and I definitely want to get into that. But before we get there, you've gotten a lot of pushback for your public persona.
You noticed that.
Somewhat confrontational style. Why should people vote for you?
Why should people vote for me? That's a very good question. I was asked the same question down at the Democratic Women's Forum, and I answered it this way. Number one, if you go to a city council meeting, most of the time, unless they're dealing with a social issue, it tends to be a kind of a boring meeting. And I promise if I'm on the city council, it won't be boring anymore. Number two is I believe I will increase significantly the level of diversity, true diversity, in the city council. Right now we have people who think alike, vote alike, talk alike, and I'm going to offer a different view that represents the rest of Bellingham. And most of Bellingham is asleep because they don't feel but there's a significant number of people who don't follow the council anymore because they don't feel represented, and I want to represent them.
Actually, if I can dig into that, you're talking about representing all of Bellingham.
Yes.
Whose voices specifically do you feel are not being represented?
Okay, that's a good question. I think people with a traditional family values are not represented. I think I know people that are Buddhist, that are Sikhs, East Indian, Jewish, Christian, that are conservative thinking. They don't feel represented. I personally don't feel represented, and I have a lot of friends that think like me. So I think there's not the majority of the town, but certainly a lot more than one-seventh.
You've compared your campaign to African-Americans' plight in the South in the 60s.
Yes, I have.
Can you elaborate on that?
If you went back to the South in the 60s, and if a black man were running for office in one of the states where Martin Luther King held his rallies, you would find that there was a great deal of pushback against somebody doing that. It was not the black man's place to run for office or to really have any kind of equality with a white man. Then you fast forward to Bellingham, Washington, or should I say West Coast United States, and we have the progressive liberal agenda that is even though they're embarrassed to admit this and would never admit it, so I'm happy to admit it for them, is they're treating me as a conservative person, as a Christian person who believes the Bible, in the same way that black people were treated back then. Now, maybe not in every respect, but certainly the pushback is the same.
Well, to be clear, the pushback that you're talking about is government agents attacking them with dogs and fire hoses, beatings, requiring federal escort to get into public accommodations.
That's true.
You're comparing your candidacy to that.
I believe that if the progressive left continues the way they are, we could come to that. We're not anywhere near that
I'm not saying where we are. I'm saying you have compared your campaign now to this. Are you saying that there is an equivalence now?
I am saying that.
How do you justify that disconnect?
I think I just
you
said
are
so.
Clearly not. You were not escorted here by federal agents. You were not under
not
attack
yet.
By government agents.
Not yet.
So it isn't happening now, is it?
Well, I have had experience in town. I'll give you an example. I went to a city council meeting where they talked about the sanctuary cities. You familiar with that discussion with the council? Okay, so and I brought a sign, and my sign said, "Legal equals illegal equals not good." When I had my 3 minutes to speak, I held up the sign, and I said my piece just like everyone else. I sat down, and while I was sitting down listening to the other people give their 3 minutes, and there were a lot of them, one of the people that I learned later from a policeman who was undocumented came down, grabbed my sign, ripped it, knocked my cell phone out of my hand, which, by the way, on the street would be called assault. But in that chamber, nothing was done. Nothing happened. I went back 2 weeks later to the city council and I said this: if I would have done what that young man did to me, you would have had me arrested. And I've talked to several police officers who agreed with me. So I'm going to ask you, do you think that's a fair way to treat one of the citizens of Bellingham?
No, that's assault and it's illegal. It is still not equivalent to the civil rights struggle.
Well, it is in spirit.
It is not in spirit.
Well, you're not in that struggle, so you don't know. See, if I was a black man and you told me you don't have a case, then I would tell you, you're not me. And I want to tell you right now, sir, you're not me. You don't know what it's like to be me. You don't have any idea. So don't you tell me what my experience is or isn't when you haven't walked in my shoes.
I'm talking about the facts. I'm talking about the facts of what have happened to you. And saying that they're not equivalent because objectively they're not equivalent.
I just gave you some facts.
Devlin, why don't you take the next question?
Yeah, let's move on to some more.
Yeah, I think I won that one. Okay, go ahead.
So contested elections are a referendum of sorts. You're running against an incumbent.
Yes.
So why do you feel that you need to be in and Roxanne needs to be out?
Well, it has nothing to do with the current occupant of the seat. I wanted to run for the city council just in general. In the ward that I live in, that particular ward is not up for election this year. If it was, I would have done that first.
Yes.
But so the only other alternative was to run at large. It had nothing to do with anybody in particular. And by the way, there's two other candidates in the race.
Sure. So then,
and there were two other candidates in the race before I got in.
Then let me reframe that. What do you believe the current candidate is doing that you could be doing a better job of than the other?
I think the current candidate is emphasizing a lot about some of the social agendas of the progressive left. For instance, this last a week or so ago, the push telling the city, the residents of Bellingham, how they should vote or how they should not sign the I-1552 petition. I don't think that's the city's job to be doing those things. And the more and more, there's many times that I've gone to meetings where they've emphasized things like that that don't appear to me to be have anything to do with city business. And the reason I think I would be better, because that's 100% of what I would be doing. People have accused me of trying to say, or with some agenda, bring some kind of Christian values or the Bible into the I don't plan to do that. I plan to work on city business. Right now, the religion or the social views of the current occupants is constantly brought in to the city council. So I want to go back to the way it should be, doing the city business. Now, I'm not saying they don't do city business, because they do, and they do some good things. It's just they don't spend enough time on it. They should be working on city business 100%, not like 50% or 25%.
You've been publicly very anti-LGBT. How can LGBT people trust you to conduct city business neutrally?
Okay, well, that's a good question. Now, I get labeled, and by the way, we're thinking about this is another reason. Like it's like a black man. I get labeled for things that are really not accurate. I am publicly for the Bible. The Bible happens to speak to things like LGBT, but it also speaks to fornication. It also speaks to adultery. It also speaks to slander. It also speaks to theft. It also speaks to many, many other things. And just to pick the one issue and to try to label me as being anti, I'm not anti any particular group. I have friends that are lesbians and homosexuals, people who respect me for what I do. Now, I realize there's a great deal of pushback about it, but I believe a lot of it is just a political way to get everybody off the real issues. And they don't want to talk about the issues of how to solve the homeless problem, which is not being done, and how to help increase affordable housing in Bellingham. And I don't just mean government housing. I'm talking about affordable housing for people like graduate from Western. They can't get the kind of job here. They have to move. I have four grown adult children. They all moved away for that very reason.
So if I can drill down a little bit more on that. So you've talked a lot about housing, about how this is important and affordable housing within Bellingham. What's your solution to make housing more affordable?
Okay, that's a good question. And of course, I've answered some of that on my page, Facebook page, and I've also answered that on my political page. I've also answered that in the voters guide, which will be coming out very soon. But here's one of I think one of the most significant things. I believe we should enable builders and individuals to be able to build smaller and smarter homes. You can take half of a size home and get just as much mileage out of it if you know what you're doing. It would require half the size of a lot. It would be half the taxes, not exactly, but I mean it would be less money, right? It would be less money. So, but right now the zoning and many other factors prevent that. And the other, yeah.
So just to clarify, so your view is if some of these zoning regulations were removed or if they were able to zone smaller.
Correct.
The idea is that there would be housing costs would come down and
well, for those people it would. I mean, it's not like if I was on the council, I'd be 1/7 of the council. It's like I'm not God here. I mean, I can't solve everything for everybody. A lot of people are acting like you shouldn't be on the council because you can't bring world peace. I mean, come on. I mean, we can make a dent in it. I believe we're headed the wrong direction. I want to go back the other direction, and not just in that, but in other ways we could make it more affordable. Another way to make housing affordable is make more money. Well, if everything we're doing is to stop job creation and stop opportunities, we're never going to have affordability here because people can't afford it, can't afford to live here.
You mentioned about stopping job. What do you feel that the current council is doing that's suppressing wage growth?
I don't think they're doing it on purpose. You take a look at the Lummi Nation, though. They're out there building new things, creating businesses, creating more jobs. We ought to learn from them, and they're going to be doing even more of it, as I've learned here recently. And we're not, as a city, we're just not doing anything. We spend a lot of the time either on pet social issues, which is the new religion of the left, or we spend time on, and I would say some of these are important things, but we're so fixed on environmental things and we talk about sustainability. But our economics are not sustainable. If we keep going like this, here's the future of Bellingham. If you keep doing the same, I'm sending this message to every voter. Here is the future of Bellingham if we don't make a change right now. Here it is. Affluent people will come from other states and, by the way, other countries and buy up the best houses here. The homelessness will increase as well. So we'll have increase of ownership of homes from people out of the city, out of the county, I should say, out of town, in whether it's another country or whatever, and we'll have more homeless. And the people who are already here are kind of left in the middle. I speak for them. I speak for every person who does not have an affordable living situation and they see their rent going up every single year or even every single 6 months. And the home prices have gone up $120,000 from the year 2012 until 2017. $120,000 average, whereas the wages have leveled off. Now you you want to know why is it not affordable to live here? You got to be insane not to understand that. And I don't see anybody wanting to work on that. And as I said, we ought to be like the Lummi Nation and start acting like we want to survive economically. I'm talking about economic sustainability.
Since you brought it up, can I ask what your opinion of Donald Trump is, since you mentioned him in a prior question?
I very briefly met him, got his autograph. I love Donald Trump. I believe he's the best thing that's happened in America in a long time, and I believe he will become one of the greatest presidents in history. That's not the case now as far as the perception of it, but if you could fast forward, I think I like Trump, but many of his policies, many good things have happened already. I realize people are saying just the opposite, but I'm talking about from a more objective point of view.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Eric.
Thank you very much for tuning in to Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham, KAVZ 102.5 FM Deming and Van Zandt, and KMRE.org worldwide. Don't forget that Election Day is August 1st. If you're a new voter or new to Washington State, you can still register in person at the Auditor's Office until July 24th, Monday, at the time of this airing, at 4:30 p.m. There are 15 ballot drop boxes across the county, but if you're mailing your ballot, it needs a 49-cent or forever stamp. If you've already lost your ballot, please contact the Whatcom County Auditor's Office. That's our show for this week. Let us know what you thought on our Facebook page. We are produced by Stephanie Contreras, and we'll be back with a regular episode soon.